This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, Amazon Prime Video has officially launched in Canada. Rogers is going to use Comcast's IPTV tech. Bell is going to use AT&T's software-defined networking tech. While Yahoo and Evernote both finish the week with egg on their face. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
The Canadian Tech Podcast is sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. Olio are the planners, designers, and developers of the apps used by some of Canada's biggest brands. Find out what Olio can do for you at oliodigitallabs.com.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 99 for Sunday, December 18th, 2016, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek the Great One Silva.
And we are celebrating the Christmas season, and also happy early birthday to you, fellow co-host, tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
By having a beverage while we're doing this podcast. So yeah. This may either be one of the greatest podcasts ever, or it's going to go very bad very quickly. So
I'm on glass of red wine number two. So we'll see how it goes from here.
And I've just started my beer, but we had to do the intro twice, two takes already. So
this is the third take.
It's the third take. I apologize. That's right. Okay, so first of all, a couple of announcements. We're going to be taking a two-week break over the holidays. We're going to be back on January the 8th with our 100th episode. So look forward to that. But we just want to wish everyone the best of the season, a happy and safe time, and all that stuff. Hope you get everything you want, and you get to spend time with family and friends. Remember, don't drink and drive and all that good stuff. So
yeah, happy Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah, yep. Merry Christmas,
Festivus.
Yes, the festival for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Whether you are Buddhist, Hindu, Jainist, maybe Sikh, yeah. Catholic, yeah. Protestant, Baptist, Muslim,
Jewish.
Jewish, Hare Krishna, Jehovah's Jedi. Witness, even Jehovah's Witnesses. I want you to have a great next couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you on January 8th again after this show.
Exactly. Okay, so let's get right on with some news. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Amazon Prime Video was supposed to launch a couple of weeks ago. It didn't, but they now officially have. So they've now offered their complete collection to Canadians. This is an on-demand streaming service, much like I was going to say YouTube. Isn't that terrible? Netflix. But a lot of original shows, such as The Grand Tour, Transparent, Mozart in the Jungle, The Man in the High Castle, which was a very good show. I had to watch it another way. so actually a very good service. It's available if you subscribe to Amazon Prime for $79 a year, mm-hmm. And they're also offering a 30-day free preview of it. Check it out, you know, and a lot of different shows on there. What do you think about this?
Well, I'm glad to see that the soft launch was sparse on purpose, because other shows that Amazon has the rights to, like Community, Justified, the very famous movie Bridesmaids. Looks like there's a show in here called Startup, which I've heard about. That's all available. So that's good. I'm glad it's not just Amazon originals, because that would have been really bad for an official mm-hmm. launch. $79 is much less expensive than what it is in the U.S. I'm pretty sure it's $99 U.S. right now. You get other things. There's a music service and stuff like that available down south, but regardless, it's cheaper here and it's not changing. So that's really good. I think I'm going to try it just to see how it goes, because I think we order enough stuff from Amazon to make the $79 worth it. I usually opt for free shipping, but certainly faster shipping would be nice.
Yeah, if you ship a couple of times, it's usually worth it.
Yeah, and my wife and I are both looking at reducing the amount of time we spend in stores in general.
is that because you went out shopping this weekend?
No, it's more so because I can buy everything we need to get from somewhere like the Superstore, Real Canadian Superstore, online in 20 minutes tops, maybe 30, including, you know, oh, do we need this? Do we need that? Like a little extra thinking about it, rather than taking 10 minutes to drive to the store, walking around for a good 30 to 40 minutes to pick up everything, spending another 5 minutes checking out, loading the car again, another 10 minutes driving home. Like, it's a good hour, hour and a half to go grocery shopping. If I can get that done in 20 or 30 minutes online and have Kathleen pick it up on her way home because she passes by the Superstore at Oxford and Gamage in London on her way home, or at least she could, or she could pick it up on her lunch, whatever. There, we have options. That would certainly save us quite a bit of time. We wouldn't get to price match that way, but, you know, there's also this thing feature called time that does actually cost money, and so does the driving in and out of the city. I know Amazon sells a ton more stuff here in Canada than they did a few years ago, so you know, there's that data saver feature as well for their video service. So, yeah, I just I think it might be worth it. It's also worth noting that similar to Netflix, when they did their big global launch, Amazon also launched in over 241 other countries other than Canada at the exact same time.
That's pretty amazing.
So yeah, they're certainly trying to go head to head with Netflix. So it'll be really interesting to see how things pan out, or whether most Canadians end up with a Netflix and Amazon Prime account over the next year or two, or, you know, Netflix and Crave, or even maybe just Amazon and Crave. It's, you know, we've got some decent options, so we'll see.
Do you think now, how about in terms of how you can watch it? Because, you know, I'm reading some of the comments here. No Roku app. The app doesn't support Chromecast. You know, do you think that might be an issue?
Yeah, that will be an issue. If there's no Roku, it's not a good option for me. No PlayStation, no Xbox app. So I don't have either of those anyway, but regardless,
it'll be interesting to see how that's going to go as well.
And they don't support Chromecast. I thought they did. I'm not buying a Fire Stick just for this.
Yeah, that's, you know, those are the comments. We'd have to look into the details, but, you know, it's definitely something like, now, granted, I've got an older Apple TV, and I realize that probably something like this, I doubt if I'll see the app. I probably would have to get a new Apple TV, but again, depending what you're looking for, that's fine too. But yeah, it's nice to see, again, more choices at reasonable pricing. You know, the cable companies and the Bells and Rogers of the world are going to have to kind of sharpen their pencils, I think, and stuff like that. So, all right, speaking of Rogers, see, I can have a beer, but I can still do a pretty good segue. They were planning IPTV. I remember hearing lots about it. Mm-hmm. But now they've decided to shelve their own off-the-shelf solution. They're going to go with Comcast platform. It's going to involve a write-off of $525 million. That's a lot of peanuts. Let's just say that right now.
No kidding.
A lot of peanuts. A lot of beer, too.
I'm sure shareholders aren't too happy about, you know, sinking $475 to $525 million into their own tech just to dump it and go with somebody else's. But I have to imagine that this is cheaper than continuing to develop their own, or else it doesn't make any sense. So anyway,
I think that's what it is, and I think we're going to see more of this with these various cable providers around the world. You know, they're going to, you know, have to come up with unified solutions, I think, because you know, they're all doing the same thing basically. So
we'll talk more about that in about 10 seconds.
Yep, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they're doing here. You know, Rogers, you know, they also wanted to become the first internet provider to offer gigabit internet to all of its customers. Now, my mother still can't get Rogers west of Kamoka, so that's a good story. But, oh, sorry, that was my outside voice. You know, they also want to...
She's not a Rogers cable customer, is she?
Nope, she's not. Sure, she'd love to be, but, you know, they just need to lay the frickin' wires. They also wanted to do 4K content, and is also set to feature 4K Ultra HD PVR functionality. That sounds like, you order the regular meal, and then you get the super uber happy meal. 4K Ultra HD.
Now, I think it's worth noting.
How much bandwidth would that be? Like, how big would a file?
4K. Okay, so I think streaming at either 480p or 720p uses about 2 megabits per second. I think that's 720p uses right. 2 megabits per second. So 1080p realistically needs probably about 3 to be comfy, 4 just in case other things are happening on your network. So if you're looking at 4K, I mean, your internet connection should be at least 25 megabits down. Just to make sure you can do it. So I should be able to stream 4K relatively comfortably with a little bit of buffering at my 30 megabits down connection because, real world depends on a lot of different factors. It's probably 60 megabits, but you could probably check, but it also depends on the codec. It depends on the level of compression and the type of compression being applied and, all that stuff.
I did a quick Google, and I'm seeing things like roughly 33 gig per minute for uncompressed. That's pretty frightening.
Gigabytes?
Gig GB per minute. I'm just looking at a few other ones here. Yeah.
Uncompressed, I guess. If it was like DVD quality or like reading from a DVD, sure, right? Like you can read from a DVD and it's like an old school 720p DVD is like 4.7 gigs, right? That's the amount of holes, and you're going to use a couple of gigabytes for that. But if you compress it and all that, it gets down.
Okay, so I found something else here for like Apple's iPhone. If you shot 4K video is significantly larger than 1080p and requires a lot more space. Well, a single minute 1080p at the standard 30 frames requires only 130 meg. A 4K video at the same frame rate would result in a whopping 375 meg. So you'd fill a 16 gig phone in about 40 minutes.
Okay, no, hang on. So the 1080p video is 130 meg?
Yeah, that's on an iPhone.
Okay, so even though... All right, so even though you're taking... four times the number of pixels, it does not quadruple the size of the file. No. That's not bad.
No. That's not bad. Again, I'm wondering if they're doing some bells and whistles.
Yeah, potentially. There.
But yeah. Well, but that's still
Apple's a big fan of H.264, that encoding technology, compression, what have you. So they enforce that a lot. So it wouldn't be surprising if they're using that or a newer variant.
So the big thing is that Rogers better not have a data cap when they start introducing that. That's my point.
Or zero really rating, which obviously goes against net neutrality principles. Exactly. But that's the only way you're gonna be able to use it.
That's kind of what I was getting at. I just took a really long way to do it. Sorry.
Sure. That's okay. That's all right. We got there and we informed everybody in the process. It's fine.
We did. I think so. I don't think too many people have turned us off yet.
No.
So, similarly,
you were saying a lot of these providers are going to have to get together and form some standards.
Bell, didn't I say that?
You did. And you're so smart because now that segues into Bell announcing that they're testing AT&T's eComp platform, which is a infrastructure delivery tool and network cloud service that facilitates SDNs, which is software-defined networks. So AT&T said in a press release that Bell is going to use the eComp platform. eComp, in case you're wondering, which you probably are, stands for Enhanced Control, Orchestration, Management, and Policy to create and manage software-defined networks. The reason for that was sparked by the fact that voice call traffic back in March 2016 on mobile networks has now been far outstripped by mobile data traffic. I think we all kind of expected that by now.
Because I was surprised. I got my new iPhone. I've discovered, it plays games. I can surf the web, and there was also a phone in there.
Yeah, I imagine that. Yeah. And so I think we all realize that data traffic's going to outsurpass the growth of voice. There are some predictions that expect the amount of mobile data traffic to go up 10x between now and 2020. That's only 3 years and a week and a half away. And that means that, for, especially for mobile networks, and you and I have talked about this a little bit, you need to be able to control the flow a little bit more effectively. And it's not necessarily traffic shaping or prioritization or, you know, any sort of net neutrality violating stuff. But what a software-defined network lets you do, essentially, is take a bunch of routers, switches, firewall, etc., virtualize them onto white server boxes instead of buying all this really expensive gear from Arista and Dell and HP and Cisco and a bunch of other companies like that, and essentially just use standard servers, which is really, really cool. And then you can actually route based on traffic. And so you could take your voice traffic, which is it's real time, obviously, and therefore needs a shorter path. That can go over one route that's really, really short. And your data traffic, even though there's a lot more of it, realistically, it can go over a longer route, or it could be deprioritized via compared to voice, just because of the nature of the traffic. And so a software-defined network lets you do that really, really easily. That sort of thing has been done for a while, but a software-defined network lets you do it really easily. And so it's worth noting, as we mentioned earlier, Bell is actually the second telecom after Orange, which is based out of either the UK or France, to officially get in on this open source eComp effort with AT&T. AT&T has promised to release the open source code together with the Linux Foundation in the first quarter of 2017. So not only are they getting together to do this, all together, but they're actually going to open source it, which is really, really cool, and will hopefully turn into a fairly significant open source effort, and Rogers could potentially use it, TELUS as well, and then the technology is not the differentiator, the deployment is, and their infrastructure.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I can see for larger corporations too. You know, this has absolutely some potential ideas all over
maybe
the place.
Maybe like a Power Financial, perhaps, and all its subsidiaries.
You know, any number of things. I can certainly see some ideas, just like virtualization of servers and that change the way the landscape and that. I could see something like this, the same thing, especially the ability. You know, I like the ability because, again, I do backups, you know, which means we tend to use a lot of the network overnight. But there's times where we have a new server or some stuff like that, a remote office. It'd be nice to, you know, there's times we said, oh, we wish we had the pipe was a bit bigger. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, things like this. We wish we could prioritize the traffic. So this would definitely play a part. So something I'm personally going to keep an eye on. So
yeah, I actually went to the first Open Networking Foundation forum back in 2010 maybe, out in I think it was Sunnyvale. I was actually at Stanford University's campus, which was really cool.
Okay.
And so this sort of talk has been out there for a while in a very conversational, collaborative, official way with the Open Networking Foundation. So finally, it's been making headway for a little while, but we're really starting to see the impacts at the consumer end of things. When you see things like this, like AT&T, Bell, Orange, etc., all joining together on some sort of effort that they're all going to deploy because they don't really compete against each other at all.
Exactly. Okay, so that's that story. Now we're going to stop for a word from our sponsor. So over to you.
Yeah, so thanks again to Olio Digital Labs for sponsoring Canadian Tech Podcast. Full disclosure, they are my full-time employer. However, I can say in working there for the last year and 4 months, it's been a great year and 4 months. And so Brendan Fargainer, who's the managing partner, has been gracious enough to sponsor the podcast, and I speak on their behalf with pride. So we're going to do a live ad this week. I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on. We've been engaging with several new prospects lately. Things are looking really good for one potential client out west. Been in discussions with them for a little while, but the more I talk to them, the more I realize this is a done deal. I really just need to like lay down the price. I can't do that yet because I'm still waiting for a little bit more information from one of their partners. But regardless, that looks like it's going to happen probably early in January. That's another mobile app. It'll be another mobile app we're working on. We're working on two really, really good ones right now. We've built several before that. If you have any mobile app needs, Olio is your shop. Absolutely. In the meantime, we're still working hard on that really long, six-month-long, you know, six-figure project that I've mentioned a few times. Mm-hmm. That's looking likely to wrap up in the new year from what I hear. Maybe not, but it sounds like it's going to wrap up pretty soon. We are working on version 4 and version 5 of a mobile app for College Pro. That's all coming together really, really nicely. Version 3 is really good. I did some testing earlier this week, personally. In terms of our website, folks might have seen recently, we kind of soft launched a revised version of it, and we finally put together a few case studies that are being shared via social media channels here and there. So keep a lookout for that. I think I shared one for Ellison Travel and Tours, and then there's one for Foresight Retail coming out soon. And who's the other one? Oh, the City of Port Colborne. Really nice looking site. Excellent. And in the meantime, I've been putting together some proposals for a few RFPs. That's going well. Overall, it's been a really good 2016, but we're looking forward very much to a great 2017 with lots of growth, new clients. So if you have any sort of web application, mobile application, integration between disparate apps, anything like that needs for that, absolutely give Olio Digital Labs a call. You can call us at 226-785-0420. You can email me personally, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at Olio, O-L-I-O, digitallabs.com. Or head to the website, check out our list of clients, and fill out the contact form, and you'll still get a hold of me there. And I will call you back within 24 hours to start the conversation.
Excellent. There we go. Well, as you said, we thank them for their support of the Canadian Tech Podcast. And we also wish you and all the staff there an excellent Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you. I forgot to mention, our Christmas party is on Wednesday. We're all learning how to throw axes. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, God. Okay, I will find my contact at Thames Valley Ambulance, just in case.
Just call Counselor Stephen Turner. He'll show up. He's an EMS.
Yeah, okay. No, just remember, axe throwing first, drinking after. just a little tip there.
A little bit of pre-drinking. Come on, let's be realistic. Okay.
All right. What's the worst that can happen? Never mind. Okay. Speaking of disasters, moving on to our second section of the show, we should just call this the security hack of the week. Hacks of the week.
No kidding.
All right. Let's start. The biggest one first, Yahoo. You know, they got hacked already, or they announced one from a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Guess what, kids? They also had another one. They had a hack back in 2013, I believe. Separate and distinct from the theft of data, they already reported $500 million. This one was $1 billion with a B.
That's got to be everybody, right?
Well, I didn't know that many people used Yahoo. Now,
that's got to be every Yahoo user.
I know. Well, with all the companies they bought over the years, like, you know, I use Yahoo for Flickr.
Yeah.
So I don't know what else would have been. So,
Yahoo. Well, yeah. They built Fantasy Sports. That's their own thing. They built Financial. That's their own thing. Yeah. This predates the acquisition of Tumblr. So that's not involved.
But the whole point is they didn't bother to tell anyone.
No.
Most importantly, Verizon is trying to buy them. And if I was Verizon right now, I'd be kind of really closing my wallet and kind of slowly backing out.
Either what somebody said on another podcast this week, Verizon is just slowly erasing zeros off the check.
That may be what it is.
Or, I mean, These are Yahoo's severely damaged goods at this point, right?
Like, oh, I know. What are they thinking?
What on earth would you? It's not even worth the ad tech anymore. You could argue probably is, but certainly not for the $4.83 billion US that Verizon's initial offer on was. So, you know, folks,
and already they've there's rumors they're already asking for $1 billion off.
Yeah, just knock another $2 billion off of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring it down to $1.83 billion, because realistically, even that's still overpaying for it at this point.
Yeah. It's just you just really got to wonder. Just some crazy stuff going there.
Now, I think it's worth noting for folks, it's not the scale, of course, on a 1 billion user number is huge. However, the breadth and depth of data these hackers looks like they got is a little mind-boggling. Do you have that list there of what they got?
I do. Names, email addresses. It says may have. Nothing's been confirmed.
Just assume they got them.
Yeah. So. Names, email addresses, telephone numbers, birth dates, hashed passwords using MD5, and in some cases, encrypted and unencrypted security questions and answers.
There's the key.
That's the key right there.
That's the key right there. So what you need to do, A, change your password. B, change all your security questions. C, if you use the same security questions on other sites and the same answers, you got to change those too.
Exactly.
This sucks.
This is why I use like a password manager. And when I used to have to do more security questions, I lie. Because just, some of them are just too easy to figure out.
Yeah, I used to do that, and then I realized I couldn't remember what my lie was. So I started using the truth, but I made sure I used questions that were like really weird.
Yeah, exactly. So this is, very unfortunate. I hate to see a brand like Yahoo, one of the original brands of the internet way back when, going this way. But
And David's home on the internet or something like that, the first Yahoo page was called?
Yep, exactly.
Or guide
when it was
to
a
the
directory,
internet.
It was manually added. Mm-hmm. Entries were manually added. This is way before Google. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, pretty sad. Very disappointed in Marissa Mayer, who originally came from Google. But, of course, she's going to have a good golden parachute no matter what. So, but just not much more we can say. All right, let's move on. Evernote. Not everyone's, but everyone's favorite brain tool, which I use a lot. They announced a new privacy policy, and then they had to quickly backtrack due to some user backlash. Part of the thing was it appeared to imply that Evernote employees would have free access to users' private notes on the server, something which the company claims is never actually the case. So this was an idea they were going to... instead of like some algorithms like Google and stuff like that being able to read notes or references to things, they're hoping to use that to try and figure out ways to improve the service. However, right. A lot of people like their notes to be private. And this originally you had to opt out of it instead of opt in. And yeah, they basically really screwed this up. And the CEO, Chris O'Neill, give him credit. They responded pretty quick. And he basically said, yeah, they screwed up the way it was communicated. I actually just got an email just before we went on air, basically saying the same thing. So they're basically backing out of that completely. And he says, quote, human beings don't read notes without people's permission, full stop. We just don't do that, end quote. The only exception is obviously court mandated requests. This shouldn't surprise anyone. Like when you've got things like, how do you think Google, when your Gmail can feed you the right sort of apps? There is an algorithm doing that, but yes. I'm sure at some point some people opt in so engineers could verify things were working. But yeah,
potentially, anything but like you just said, they opted in.
Exactly, this should always be an opt-in. And this is the big problem when they do stuff like this. Stuff like this has to be an opt-in. You can't just say, you know, rely on people to be lazy and opt out. So they seem to have learned their lesson pretty damn quick, because, yeah, the user community was pretty well up in arms pretty damn quick.
Yeah, people were complaining on social media. People canceled subscriptions to Evernote Premium, which was probably a little premature, but regardless, this actually cost Evernote money.
And it's also, for someone to cancel a subscription, that means they're going to have to do some work to, you know, they make it fairly easy to get the notes out of the service, but it's still some time. It's serious enough. If someone's going to take the couple of hours to properly export and import it into something else like OneNote or whatever, you know, they were peed off, basically.
Yeah.
So kudos. Yeah. So definitely kudos to Evernote like that. Okay, story here in the Huffington Post. We all remember Bill C-51, the previous conservative government for online surveillance. Well, there's some stories now the Harper Liberals may be wanting to possibly strengthen instead of loosening it. So this prompted a letter from several senior Canadian tech execs saying, don't make this worse. We don't want online surveillance expanded. I forgot. This has a fair warning. The link here has a sound video that plays automatically.
yes, it does.
Anyway, Public Safety Canada is considering warrantless access to Canada's internet user identifying information, as well as a rule that will require internet providers to keep track of web surfing activity. 60 entrepreneurs from Canadian tech and new media companies have signed an open letter to the Prime Minister and the Public Safety Minister, expressing serious economic and data safety concerns with the direction of the federal government's national security consultation. Most people who know us both know that both of us believe in, private and secure data. Not that we're doing anything illegal, but we just don't think Big Brother should be able to have a peek inside our emails. You want to add some comments?
Yeah, it's my business. Stay out of it. I think that's a sentiment that a lot of people would echo in general, whether we're doing something illegal or not. Certainly, any additional data protection or data storage requirements so that the government could get to it later would impose additional costs on some very, very small businesses, some here in London and others in places like Kitchener, Waterloo, Calgary, Alberta, or Calgary, Edmonton, etc. And for any small ISPs, buying gear that reads that stores internet traffic metadata, essentially, and then ties it back to a specific user, that's not cheap. Those are boxes that are, I'm pretty sure, last time I checked, cost $10,000 to $15,000 a piece. And then, of course, you need to power it. You need to redo your infrastructure to account for this thing, or you could use, I guess you could use a tap that that just reads a whole switch, but regardless, you got to connect this and use up a port or something like that. Like, it's not just like, oh, just flip a switch and start tracking this stuff and storing it. No, it uses space, it uses power, and it costs money to set up in the first place. So it's certainly not without cost. And you know, we've seen, to what benefit? That's my thing always. It's like, okay, fine, if you absolutely need to infringe on my rights in general, what am I going to get out of it? Or what is the Canadian populace going to get out of it? And we've seen with things like the Patriot Act in the US that it hasn't helped. And I know that the Patriot Act's been watered down quite a bit over the last decade or so, but it hasn't helped. So, right. Or it's helped very, very minimally. And I don't want to be the next Britain where Canadian Food Inspection Agency has access to all my internet history. For what? Like, this is, it got really out of hand in the UK just recently, requiring that ISPs there retain data for a year. But literally, almost every single government agency, whether they have anything to do with public safety or not, or like terrorism or anything like that, can read your internet data. That it's pointless.
Yep.
So I'm really glad to see that a bunch of different companies signed on to this. Looks like public safety is trying to distance itself from any sort of law that could put or amendment to Bill C-51 that could head in this direction. Mm-hmm. But I just don't even want the conversation to happen. It's not worth it. So we'll have to see what happens. But if you feel strongly about this, I'm pretty sure there are some online. There is a website where you can comment on Bill C-51 changes. So definitely find it. There's probably a link in this article, and make yourself heard.
Exactly. Okay. Our last story. LinkedIn was recently purchased by Microsoft. And they purchased lynda.com. I think I got that. Do I have that right in the right
LinkedIn
order?
LinkedIn bought lynda.com.
And then they got bought by Microsoft.
Microsoft bought LinkedIn. Yeah.
Okay. So LinkedIn has been informing users of lynda.com. For those who don't know, lynda.com is an excellent online training tool, excellent videos on all sorts of subjects. However, they also got hacked. So they've been informing users involved of a data breach, emailing the customer, say, an unauthorized third party breached a database that had some of your lynda.com learning data, such as contact and courses viewed. Now, they say there's no evidence supported that passwords were gotten, but they're basically letting people know. Now, Derek, you actually just got an email from them, didn't they?
I got an email yesterday about this. Yeah, I saw that this had happened. I said, okay, well, I'll log in soon and change my password. It does look like lynda.com actually went ahead and reset passwords for under 55,000 lynda.com users. So that's pretty good. But just in case, they notified the other 9.5 million lynda.com users who had learner data. I don't even have learner data in there. My first name and password and last name are in there, and an email address, but that's about it. And I'm pretty sure it's a unique password. So I'll change it anyway, of course. Mm-hmm. But there's no billing information or anything in there. I haven't paid for lynda.com. So I'm not too worried about it. It sucks, of course, but I'm not personally worried about this one.
Yeah, exactly. So again, just the usual stuff applies. Just use a strong password and just, makes sense. But again, kudos to the company for coming forth, unlike Yahoo, coming forth very cleanly and promptly and letting people know. It is actually a great service. Here's an aside. If you're a patron of the London Public Library and you have a library card, you can use lynda.com for free.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure some other Canadian libraries do as well. So definitely check your local library, especially if you're in a mid-size or large city. For access to lynda.com, it's probably there.
Exactly. Okay, stuff we like. Mine this week is a neat little one called Radio Garden. It's a website you go to, and what it does is it actually curates live streams or live radio streams. It puts them on a globe map. And then you can move the map around and you'll see little dots. And so what it tries to do is it tries to find live streams of radio stations. So the first time I used it, it found six in London. Not all the live streams were working, but most of them were. But it's really neat just to kind of scroll the little globe all around the world. Mm-hmm. And, Radio Germany or Radio, Radio in Korea, stuff like that. The graphic's quite good, and they do static if you're in between a radio station. So you can actually scroll around and zoom in and out the map, and if you happen to be within range of a radio station, it'll bring it up. It's kind of fun, kind of neat to see different radio stations and things like that. So that was worthwhile. that was, you know, I've popped in and out of it a few times. I love finding all these old radio stations and stuff like that. So it's kind of neat to see, you know, you can drill down and see, you know, the radio station in the country you were born and stuff like that. So, hey, maybe you can catch the next Portugal football game live.
Oh, I already listened to those live.
I know, but see, you can actually get the local ads from, you know, back from the homeland.
Yeah, I get those. I listen to Radio Difusão Portuguesa once or twice a week to listen to Benfica games or Portugal national soccer games, you know, like friendlies and World Cup qualifying right now.
Yeah, I do the same thing for the BBC.
Yeah,
I go to various BBC websites and stuff like that. So,
okay, yeah. A quick aside, just because you mentioned the BBC, I found out about this really fun game that they do called Playground Insults on BBC Radio 1.
Okay.
Occasionally, they don't do it very often, but every once in a while they'll have two celebrities both in at a time who are
I've heard of this.
Potentially promoting the same thing or different things. And they will have them exchange playground, very juvenile insults. Mm-hmm. And it is hilarious. Four or five videos on YouTube. Just search for BBC Radio Playground Insults.
Latest one's Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt.
Yes. It was so good. It was really good. It was funny.
Yeah. No, I have heard of these. I haven't listened to a few of them in a while. I'll have to play catch up. But BBC Radio is fantastic.
Will Smith and Margot Robbie are in one. What's her name? Chloe Moretz or something like that. Uh-huh. And Seth Rogen do one together. Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg. Yeah, that's a good one. That one's kind of funny just because two grown men are trying to make fun of each other. Yeah, and then the other ones I think are all a man and a woman, but they are quite funny.
Exactly, all good stuff from Auntie Beeb, as we say. Over there. That's what we say. Have you turned on Auntie Beeb?
So, I thought it was just the Beebs.
It's the Beeb, but some people say Auntie Beeb.
Yeah,
because you know every time they talk about budget cuts and that, it's like people hear about the CBC. People like to complain about it, but they all love their Auntie Beeb in the end. Exactly. So, all right. So, what have you got this week that you like?
I have a somewhat predictable Super Mario Run. I downloaded the game the other day and I played through the first couple of free levels, part of World 1. And then I also did a couple of Toad Rally races. Well, not races. So the Toad Rally is interesting. Basically, you play through a level, and you have to do so with style. And and that means that when you are – so Mario in Super Mario Run will automatically vault over small villains like Goombas and other small objects. But if you tap on the screen when you're vaulting over the Goomba, you will jump off the Goomba, squish it, Super Mario Brothers original NES style, and also do a cool little jump in the air. And while you're in the air, if you tap again, you do like a hammer spin around where your fists stick out and that sort of thing. So the more things you do like that, the more little tricks and stuff like that you do in the Toad Rally, the higher your points go. The more spins and fancy stuff you do, the more Toad spectators you get fans, and they eventually join your kingdom. And paired on top of that, as the more coins you get, the better. So you want a ton of coins plus a ton of fancy moves to get more fans, spectators, to watch your race against this other human person. So, yeah, that was kind of fun. You do that a bunch of times. And then it's got a real-time strategy element to it where you're actually rebuilding the Toadstool Kingdom. So that's kind of fun too. So anyway, I bought the game. I spent the $14, and I don't regret it a bit.
Awesome. And finally, our last section. What are we up to lately? Well, I think I'm finally over this cold and flu bug that seems to hit me about a month ago and just you know, basically knocked, you know, in D&D, Dungeons & Dragons term, knocked 20% off my stacks, if not more. I swear, it's been terrible. So I've been trying to catch up on some chores here. I can't believe Christmas is next weekend.
Sure
That's
is.
That's like, yeah, I'm glad we've got most of the stuff done, most of our plans. So we don't do a ton of stuff. Just what the heck happened to December? I've been sick. Just doing some stuff like that. Haven't done too much on the model building or hobby front or on the computer side of things, just kind of, you know, day in, day out stuff. So hoping over I'll have a couple of days off over the Christmas break, and I'll hopefully catch up a little bit more with that. What about you?
Well, we had our last Middlesex Center Council meeting last Wednesday until the new year. So that's all done for the moment. Celebrated my birthday with family today. Of course, we're getting ready for Christmas. Going to try and do a lot of learning over the next few weeks since, you know, it's not that slow, but there is a normal sales lull around this time of year. One of my birthday gifts was actually tickets to the North American International Lotto Show down in Detroit.
Nice.
So my oldest son and I are going to go to that. Obviously, I'm going to report back. It'll be way after all the normal press stuff happens. But, you know, maybe you'll get a different perspective on all the unveilings and things like that. And I try to find a unique perspective when I go, because you'll get a lot of news about concept cars and that sort of thing. Concept cars don't exist. They're concepts definition. So I'll tell you about all the cool concept cars I saw, but I really want to focus on things that are actually happening, like things you can use today, you know, or next model year, 2018, 2019 model year. So, yeah, so I will absolutely focus on that sort of stuff. And so maybe we'll do a one mic, 10 minute extra at the end of the next podcast episode after that. But I anticipate going January 15th, the second day it's open to the public. Worst case scenario, the weekend after that, the Saturday or the Sunday. But I'm going to try and get there the first Sunday, go first thing in the morning, spend the whole stinking day there, and bring my son back in time just for bedtime.
Good, so, good. And you'll have to let us know what his favorite car is.
I absolutely will. I will ask him.
We can have the report from him.
Maybe we'll even get him on the podcast. We'll see.
There you go. That'll be cool. Yeah, you know. Excellent. So, okay. I think we're done then. And we're actually survived. We didn't drop any swear words.
No. Nope.
My beer is almost gone. How's that glass of wine going?
It's gone a long time ago.
There we go. So, time to refill again. All right. So, again, don't forget to review us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever else you get your podcast. Retweet us. We love retweets. Like us on Facebook. Leave us a comment at contact at CanadianTechPodcast.ca. Let us know what you think if you have any suggestions. So, again, best of the season. We'll see you all in a couple of weeks. So, for episode 99 for Sunday, December 18th, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.